to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
We're probably going to be faced with three primary themes. That's having to do with COVID, wildfires, and then the overall budget. The things that are getting in the way are certainly childcare, housing, a trained and motivated workforce, broadband. Most recently, it's actually taxes.
One of the big problems that I see in the area is energy problem and internet. It seems to be very spotty and not really sufficient. All the energy on the coast of Oregon is brought in. I think that's one of the things that the Oregon coast really needs to think about.
I think one of the things that I've worked really hard the last 5 years on is to be at the table. And I think that we have a saying over here, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, Lane County, and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's January 15th, 2020 program, Spotlight on the Coast, Economic Challenges and Opportunities. This is the 16th program of our 2020-2021 programming year. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page, and are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 on Mondays at 7 p.m. As the new year dawns, communities throughout the Oregon coast face unique economic challenges and opportunities. On the one hand, as recently detailed by the Oregon Office of Economic Analysis, rural Oregon, including the coast, has lost a smaller share of jobs than urban Oregon since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. On the other hand, prior to the onset of the pandemic, rural Oregon had barely regained the level of jobs prior to the Great Recession of 2007 through 2009, continuing a troubling pattern of lagging economic growth. The effects of this geographic inequality go far beyond economics, affecting everything from life expectancy to access to health insurance. We're privileged to have the opportunity to hear from tribal, government, and business leaders on the coast about their work to boost opportunity in their communities and what all Oregonians can do to promote an economy of shared prosperity for all. I would like to thank Andrew Kolich for coordinating today's program. Our speakers today include Senator Dick Anderson, representing Oregon's 5th Senate District, Chief Doc Slider of the Confederated Tribes of Coos, and Bettina Hannigan, President and CEO of the Florence Area Chamber of Commerce. Biographical information on today's speakers can be found on our website at cityclubofeugene.org. Each of our guests will begin with a brief opening statement.
Hello, my name is Andrew Kolich. I'm a member of the Program Committee from the City Club of Eugene and the coordinator of today's forum on the coastal economy. Some of you might be wondering, I thought Eugene was on the eastern side of the coastal range, and you'd be right about that. We haven't relocated from the Lamon Valley. But more important than ever before, the City Club wants to reach out to all Oregonians, whether it's across the coastal range, the Cascade Range, or everywhere in between. I was reading The Other Oregon, an essential periodical, just this week, and there was a farmer from eastern Oregon, Nella Mae Parks, who wrote this, and I thought it was apt for today's session. What I want to see in 2021 is some good old-fashioned bridge building between urban and rural, Western Oregon and Eastern Oregon, young and old, between races, between political parties, But let's not construct a series of bridges to nowhere. I want bridges from here to a more perfect union, and I want people to start crossing them. And that's exactly what we're going to do today with an amazing group of community leaders on the coast. We will hear opening statements from each of them. And so I'm happy to turn over the mic to newly elected Senator Dick Anderson. Senator?
Thank you, Andrew. And certainly thank you to the City Club of Eugene. I appreciate that. I am the recently elected and more recently sworn in state senator from District 5 here on the coast. Let me take a moment for those who aren't perhaps acquainted with District 5 to describe it for you. It's a large Senate district. On the northern edge, boundary is just south of the city of Tillamook, and it goes all the way south down the coast to the southern tip of the city of Coos Bay. On the easterly line is pretty much the coastal range, and we dip into Yamhill County and Polk County for just a little bit. In total, I touch partially six counties and the entirety of one, being Lincoln County. We're comprised of seaports, of airports, of railroad lines, of state highways. We have casinos. We certainly have rural hospitals, state correction facility, a federal correction facility. And as a region, we are perhaps the highest unemployment rate as a region right now, and typically remain in that category. And I think about that as our backbone for the economy has been in the past and continues to be, you know, farms, forests, fisheries, and tourism. And certainly with the pandemic, you know, the tourism aspect has been greatly impacted. You know, we're an older population on the Senate district. And as far as political, you know, we look a lot like the state of Oregon. It's interesting to note in Senate District 5, 26% of the registered voters are Republican, 32% are Democrats, and 42% are unaffiliated. And yet this is a district that elected myself, a Republican. And I take that as a compliment and probably recognizing, as I hope the state does, that you know, voters have perhaps decided that the two parties, the extremes in the two political parties, have gone too far. And it's now to come back to the middle and create some balance in the legislature. I've had great committee assignments, and I say great because one, being a member of the super minority party, the Republicans, and then being a rookie, I got placed on the full Ways and Means Committee, which is quite unusual. And I have two subcommittees under Ways and Means, and that's Natural Resources and General Government. As far as actual Senate committees, I'm on Housing and Development, as well as the Human Services, which is Mental Health and Recovery. I'm actually vice chair of that committee. And finally, there's a group of us representatives and senators that touch the coast called the Coastal Caucus. It comprises of seven electeds. And currently, we just switched five Republicans and two Democrats. Is a week ago, it was just reversed, is that. But because of the election, the Republicans have become dominant in the caucus. But that's been quite a powerful group in the legislature because we touch so many different committees and influence. So it's for a region, it's had a lot of impact. Andrew had asked me to talk a little bit about challenges for this region. And, you know, I look at them from a legislative perspective. We're probably going to be faced with three primary themes. That's having to do with COVID, wildfires, and then the overall budget. those challenges certainly are impacted from our coastal region, both individually and communities on the coast. You know, I've talked about in my campaign for this seat, the coast has been forgotten by urban politicians. And that's one of the things that I'll be trying to shine a light on for this region. And I say that because, you know, when we talk about the urban-rural divide, in most cases, if not all, rural is thought to be Eastern Oregon. The coast isn't even in that discussion. And, you know, yet when you look at economic statistics for the state of Oregon, pre-COVID anyway, the state has shown some just really hard-charging, strong economic recovery, more revenue than ever before. But when you dig down into the coastal region, you know, we have not recovered, quite frankly, from the recession of 2008. So those are some of the things that I hope to change as I enter my term as state senator in the legislature. And the things that are getting in the way are certainly childcare, housing, a trained and motivated workforce, broadband. Most recently, it's actually taxes. You know, that corporate activity tax has raised its ugly head, especially with restaurants that are being faced with having to pay a tax when they've been bleeding revenue and not making a profit. And then those same entities that have suffered through this COVID, those small businesses, are now getting notices of their premiums for unemployment premiums for the coming year. They've all risen significantly, even though they were forced to shut their businesses and lay off their workforce. So it's devastating for the local economies. Opportunities, you know, as I talked about the challenges, those challenges also turn right into opportunities. COVID has created a great opportunity. We've seen an exodus from metropolitan areas to the coast. Our second homes are full-time now, not being rented, but by the owners as they've left the more urban areas. We've discovered that at least when the internet works and works at a level of consistency, you can work from home or work from anywhere and you know, attend school from anywhere. Our natural beauty keeps people here. And you know, even our lack of housing stock offers a opportunity for builders, because you wonder why the free market hasn't worked on the coast, why there aren't contractors and builders building more houses. So those are, for me, are an opportunity. And then finally, you know, the disappearing middle management that we have going on in this country, our support and efforts with community colleges through the blue collar economy provides just a huge opportunity for the coast, assuming we can support the community colleges and put them in a position to train those necessary skills for the blue economy. With that, I'm going to pass it to Chief Slater.
Thank you, Senator Dick Anderson, and congratulations on your win in the Senate seat. Hopefully we'll be able to work together in that positive way. My name is Doc Slider. I'm the chair, the chief of the Coos Lower Umpqua Sayula tribe. We've been around for over 10,000 years in this area. We signed a treaty with the federal government in 1855. When we did that, we ceded over 1.6 million acres of land to the federal government. Not only our tribe, but a lot of the tribes on the coast also signed a treaty that was similar to that. And most of them never received a penny for their land. We were terminated, like a lot of the tribes in the state of Oregon, in 1954, August 13th, as a matter of fact. we fought for 30 years and we were finally reinstated on August 17th of 1984. So in that since that time, we've been building up our government and trying to move forward in a positive way to help our tribal members and the community. Dick mentioned we are a owner of one of those casinos in Florence, the Three Rivers Casino. With the Three Rivers Casino and the employees that work in the Eugene area, in Florence area, I think we have like over 360 people employed. So, which is quite a few, and probably at least 50 plus people are work on the government side, and the rest probably for the casino. Dick brought up the COVID-19. One of our big decisions that we finally came to is, everybody knows, you know, we closed our casino down for 6 months. Pretty well took, well, it did. It took all the money that we had laid aside to pay the wages and to keep the business going. So since that time, with Lane County being high on the list, we made a decision to keep our restaurant open. When we did that, that was a very hard decision. If had we not kept it open, there would have probably been 25 to 30 people that would have been had to been laid off, adding to that unemployment. Some of the things that we did to work with the state to keep that open is we have when you go to the door, if you've never been there, there's an ID. You have to show your ID, and when you show your ID, that's for contract tracing in case somebody does break out that. The day that you have to be there, they'll be able to reach you. And you get your temperature taken. And masks are required at all times unless you're eating or drinking. Inside the restaurant, just like a lot of the restaurants, you know, we've cut our capacity down to 50%. All the tables are 6 foot apart. We have plastic shields around the bar and points of sale. When somebody leaves, they use a UV handheld wand to go over the area in case there is somebody did actually have was packing that coronavirus with them. So you know, we've gone through that process. Along with that, in our air purification units, we put in 5 units inside those that where the air circulates through that kills that virus. We have a lunchroom for our employees. We have a small UV unit in there and also a UV unit in our finance office. So, you know, we've gone through those extra protections to not only keep our employees safe, but our guests, because without our guests, you know, the casino would not be there. Some of the money that we put into the area is the building of the casino, which was over, you know, over $50 million, you know. We purchased a golf course a number of years ago, which is a few more million dollars. Peace Hike here a number of years ago. The hospital, we did a $150,000 donation to that. You know, I think it ended up being like $45,000 a year we put into that till that was paid for. The Three Rivers Foundation, in the last few years, they've donated to 229 organizations. And they've donated over $1 million. You know, we're trying to do the best we can for the economy on the coast. One of the things that, as I was watching the news today, and Cushman, the road's closed again. You know, that's one of those projects that everybody on the coast has been working with the state to try to get that problem taken care of. You know, and so what a good day, a bad day to have the road closed, but a good day to be able to bring that back up to everybody's attention. You know, that's one of the big problems. You know, you go, if you come to the Florence area in the summertime, it's pretty busy, but in the wintertime, you know, it's usually just the local people that are around. One of the big problems that I see in the area is energy problem, and Dick kind of talked on that a little, touched on that. Internet seems to be very spotty and not really sufficient to really say it's there at all times. You know, you get a storm brought in, you know, I live up Coos River and I can't even get cable TV or anything, you know, so I'm on a satellite dish and I'm probably lucky to have that, but if it storms too much, it's gone. You know, that's a challenge. The energy, you know, all the energy on the coast of Oregon is brought in. We have nothing that generates energy. I know here a number of years ago, and maybe Dick maybe answered that question, but there was a small wind generator in Yachts, but I don't know if that's still going, and that was only running one business, you know. I think that's one of the things that the Oregon coast really needs to think about, trying to be able to generate some of our own energy, especially, you know, with the tsunamis that, you know, that could one day happen, with the earthquakes that, you know, will eventually happen, whether it's my time or my grandkids' times. That's probably going to be one of the big projects, you know, trying to get the roadways into the area. And that's not to say that the state doesn't do that job. They do that at a pace. As I know last year going to Eugene, we're doing quite a bit of work there. So, you know, each little improvement they do brings a few more people to the area. So it's that process of remembering what we need and to keep on that to make sure that it doesn't go down the list. Keep those projects on the top of the list and bring them up every 4 or 5 months so that we don't forget about them. And I think that's pretty well about all that I have to say. And again, thank you for inviting me to be part of this, and I'll turn this over to Tina. Thank you.
Hello, and thank you for having me. Thank you for the nice introduction. I'm Bettina Hannigan. I'm the Florence Area Chamber of Commerce President and CEO. And I think that this is an amazing panel of people bringing the different ideas and thoughts and challenges that our communities are facing here on the coast. I think Senator Anderson brought up a lot of the topics that are in my wheelhouse that we struggle with here. I think one of the things that I've worked really hard the last 5 years on is to be at the table. And I think that we have a saying over here, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So we'd like to be at the table, and it's difficult when we're 60 miles away. It's not like we can just be at every meeting all the time. I'm actually speaking to you all from one of my very dear friend's bedrooms, because I was at the Eugene airport this morning and I can't get home to my home office because Cushman is flooded. So it's always nice to have friends that loan you their house, feed you lunch, and give you their computer to be able to Zoom in with all of you. So it's nice to be here. You know, one of the challenges that we have here in Florence is obviously similar to the rest of the coast, and that's housing. One of our dear friends is a general contractor here in town, and he gave, just as an example, he gave a bid to build a home for a family last year, and they didn't take it at that time because they had different reasons, and so they put it out for bid again this year. It came in over $30,000 higher this year than last year. Material prices have just skyrocketed, and it's very difficult to get skilled labor over here on the coast. If your heater or air conditioner goes out, you might as well just sit and wait, because it's going to be a while, because we're just short on skilled trades. And everybody, the businesses here are struggling with skilled workforce. And then when we finally do get those workers, and we build that relationship, and we have the stability, because being a seasonal economy here with the tourism, you know, it's a big burden on employers to be able to keep their employees year round. So there's a lot of struggle for that. I actually came up with the idea years ago that if we could create a phone app for our hospitality industry, then maybe in the summertime they could come here from Palm Springs when Palm Springs shuts down, and then in the wintertime they can leave here and go back to Palm Springs. And I thought, well, maybe I'd make $1 million with that app, but that was as far as that went. So we do struggle with our workforce, And with our, you know, I think one of the things that's the most heart aching thing that we struggle with here is so many of our young people grow up, they get through school and they move away. And I think that, you know, sometimes you move away because you want to, even if you're in a big city or something. I think a lot of our young people move away just for, because they need the opportunity for a career and to have those resources. It's very difficult for small business to be able to afford the insurance and the overhead and the staff support that larger corporations are able to leverage. And so it makes it a more challenging and more competitive environment to get and keep good workers and to keep that job satisfaction high. COVID has given us a real double whammy here in Florence. Our little community is about 15,000 people, if we include some of our outlying areas. And the city itself is around 10,000. But we do $147 million a year in tourism revenue on a regular year here. That equates into almost 2,000 jobs. So those jobs are all in the not all in the hospitality industry, but they're all affected by hospitality. So imagine your family comes to town from Eugene, and you come over and you stay in a hotel and you do go shopping and you eat. And then those workers that served you take their salary and their tips, and they go to the True Value store and they buy home improvement items for their house, which then they hire a contractor to use them. So those tourism dollars swim around in our town quite a bit before they leave. And so the tourism, even though a lot of jobs aren't considered tourist jobs, they really are funded by tourism revenue. So it's, I know there's a lot of talk these days about some of the restaurants. We've got some here in Florence. I know there's some in Springfield that are, quote, defying the governor's orders. I would like to change that word to trying to survive through the governor's orders. I don't think that, I think it's a lot to do with perspective. I don't think it's a rebellion. I think it's desperation. And we're seeing a lot of people getting very desperate. And I talk to the employers, I take their phone calls, they're in tears. They're not in tears because they're losing their homes, which they are. They're not in tears because they're losing their hopes of retirement, because they are. They're in tears because their employees are losing their homes. Their employees are losing their cars. Their employees aren't able to take care of their children. They're trying to, in the struggle and the stress that our employees are going through, trying to school from home, with internet, you know, with internet that's sketchy to say the least, if in some areas. And you know, if we were kind of programmed to be teachers, we'd all be teachers. And so these parents are struggling with working from home, being school teachers to their children, which they've never before, maybe teaching them a different style of learning than what we were raised with. So I think that from a chamber perspective, and I say this all the time, that the chambers are like hearts have chambers, and the chamber has a heart. And even though we represent business, and sometimes it appears that we're cold-hearted and that we don't care, everything that we do is really because we do care. And many times I've said, and I know it's an uncomfortable statement, but it's very hard for poor people to help people. If we don't have businesses doing business and making money, then we don't have people providing jobs. We don't have people mortgaging and spending money and leveraging these resources in our community. If we don't have our businesses being successful, we don't have any money to support the Boys and Girls Club or Rotary or our churches or the other things that we're passionate about are helping and our service to our community. So I think that those are some of our challenges. One of our, I think the opportunities that COVID has brought to us is this very environment that we're in right now, Zooming. We're all tired of it, but we're doing it. And I think that it brings us together in ways that we wouldn't have been able to as frequently as we have. I've had the pleasure of meeting Senator Anderson before and the chief before, but I've gotten to visit with him now twice in 1 week, which we haven't been able to do in years. So I think that it's been wonderful to be able to be at the table together, to build these relationships together and overcome challenges. One of the strategies our chamber is partners with the city and as a tourism marketing agent. And one of our slogans that we've developed through this process is work where you play. So, you know, come over to the coast and work where you play. Our hotels have internet. We've got hotels with kitchens in the rooms, so you don't have to eat out if you don't want to. And, you know, just kind of doing different resources, you know, so work where you play, learn where you play, and just coming together and being more flexible. I see a future. I wonder what we're going to do with all this office space that's not going to be needed anymore, because we all have confidence that we can be productive working remotely. So that's an interesting idea. And one of the things I've thought about over the last year is, you know, maybe some of that property can be converted into housing for some of our less expensive options, you know, maybe doing some kind of dorm style housing or something. So I think that as a country, we're going to see a lot of changes. We're never going to be the same. We're going to be different. And change is not easy, but it's the only thing that is always there is change. And I think that, you know, I lived in Palm Springs for years, and there's a reason why those trees grow sideways. It's because it's windy and they've learned how to be flexible. So I think that as we all just kind of start to embrace some of the change that we're going to see around us and come together and work with each other with what we share, our passions for our community and for the people that we love, and for the health of our communities, that we're going to see a brighter future, even though it's going to be a different future.
This has been our January 15th, 2020 program, Spotlight on the Coast, Economic Challenges and Opportunities. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page. More details and information about future programs can be found online at the City Club's website, cityclubofeugene.org. Now, I would like to thank today's speakers for a great program. Senator Dick Anderson, Chief Doc Slider, and Bettina Hannigan. Thank you very much.